We are here today with a very special guest. It's myself, it's Neil Donoghue, and we've got the legend that is Rob Warner. Rob, how's it going?
All right, thank you. Yeah, good. Nice to be here.
This is a new setting for us, isn't it? The mountain bike podcast.
Oh, a new set. Is this the dirt shed?
This is the dirt shed.
But I've not been in here in this capacity before.
I mean this physical setup as a podcast.
I used to present that show till I got fired.
That's true.
You actually haven't...
There you go! Yes, Don, he's just confirmed that I was sacked.
Actually, before we let Rob make it completely loose already...
Being serious.
You haven't actually ever been fired.
Mate,
you still
healed.
Work here.
Don't matter.
You still work here.
Well, I did go to sleep during a... Was it? I fell asleep during...
You did go to sleep.
We've all done that.
We're filming.
Yeah. What?
Didn't look good on camera. Well, it looked great on camera, actually, but it didn't make the director that happy.
No, that's right.
No, never mind.
So,
anyway,
most people watching this or listening to this will probably know who you are, but how would you describe yourself? What is your job title these days?
Presenter, I suppose. Commentator, presenter, host, I suppose. Sometimes Euro term is... The host.
The host.
Those three, really. That's it, isn't it?
But you say you're doing the racing. Obviously, that's the probably one the most people know you for is the World Cup downhill and cross country as well. How has that been, sort of doing both of those disciplines? Quite different.
Yeah, it's nice on a week. Do you know what? When I started doing the downhill, which was for Freecast, you know, when we started out on that whole thing with the World Cup lives, and they made me do cross country. In fact, I think it was it wasn't free card. The first year Red Bull come in, I had to do cross country. And I was like, oh my God. You know what I mean? I didn't have a clue about it. And that first year wouldn't have been great, but I got through it. And actually, as I've commentated on it over the years, I love the cross country. And I'm talking about, I love watching it though. You know, you see how hard they go for like an hour and 20. You're like, it's different to the downhill. But a good cross country race is every bit as good as a good downhill race.
It's
racing
now.
Yeah,
really.
I just watch them and I'm like, you savages, man! Like they just sprint for like an hour and 20 minutes or whatever it is, hour and a half. Like it's the pace of it. You know, I still like ride mountain bikes more in that capacity, just going out for not like that, but I go out for like nice cross country rides for 45 minutes. You know
it's,
what I mean?
It's sometimes like more relatable, I think, because I'm same. I've never used to be into it. Now I really enjoy watching it. Yeah. I make a point to try and watch everything over the weekend.
Yeah.
And some of the women's races, cross country especially, have been absolutely unbelievable.
They can be absolute. Well, the greatest probably was, end of last year, Le Bresse, wasn't it? That women's final last year was, I mean, there was never been a spectacle like it with so much on the line as well. I mean, that was,
great race.
Unrepeatable, great that was, that race.
But what about personally? Do you still ride a bit?
I ride when I can, you know. Yeah, I'm so busy with work, really. But like, as soon as I finished work in September, then I'm straight on the bike. And it ain't easy because I'm never fit then. I'm always like never getting a routine of riding. So I have to force myself. Went out on a cyclocross bike this week.
Have you?
Yeah.
Cyclocross bike?
Yeah.
Sorry, I can't.
Yeah,
I've
even got a cyclocross bike now.
I can't picture that. Do you get off and run with it?
No, I push it. I walk with it. It's never been on my back. No. I have, yeah.
Really?
I even wear some weird road helmet to look the part. Yeah, yeah.
You've got to really. If you're going to do it, you've got to dress up.
Yeah, you've got to look the part. Yeah.
I mean, that's what I was going to talk about. You're well known for loving moto trials, motocross.
Yeah.
Jet skiing. I see you do quite a lot of that sometimes as well.
Yeah.
What's your favourite thing? Or is it just you just like doing everything?
Motorbikes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Moto or trials?
Someone's phone's not on silent. Did you hear my gate go? What do I like the most? Do you know what, mate? I've done all these sports for so long, like, you know, since I was four or five years old. We did motorbike trials. Mm. And I have to switch between them a bit. And at the moment, I really haven't ridden my trials bike for the last 18 months, but I went away on that trip and everything and I sort of lost touch with it. And I did a couple of trials and I didn't like them. And then I did a trial the other day and I did well and I rode well again. I was a bit more fit. It's getting harder for me. My shoulders are getting more and more knackered. But yeah, and I loved, and I'm back into it now. The most frustrating thing for me is that I can't, with trials, even until probably 4 or 5 years ago, I'd still be out on my trials bike when I was about at least two days a week, like, you know, out on a Thursday and then out on a Sunday. And I just physically can't do that as much anymore. I mean, I've got to have another elbow surgery. So now I've got to just back it down a bit. And then the dirt bike's easier for me to ride. So
is it?
Yeah.
Hard to believe. It's crazy.
It's my elbows and my shoulders. And I think the trials is all lifting.
Yeah.
And on the dirt bike, it's almost like the pull, of the traction. It like gives my arms traction.
It works.
Yeah. I feel probably more messed up after a hard trial than a hard enduro. Yeah, weird, isn't it?
And this is all injuries from the mountain bike racing days, or a bit of everything?
Mate, I think I counted up the other day. It was 19 bones I've broke, but it was only one on the mountain bike. All the others were on motorbikes. Yeah. I broke my shoulder blade with Pete Tompkins with the JMC shooting the dirt promo in about 92 or something.
Yeah.
And then all that time I was racing, I broke a load of ribs racing and had some nasty concussions. But I didn't like, you know, I broke this left leg four times, this one once. They've all had surgery, thumbs, shoulder. Yeah, I'm wrecked. Motocross wrecked me.
Yeah.
But I'd do it all again. It was mint.
Crazy, the injuries, isn't it? If you think about I was writing a blog the other day. And I was trying to add up how many bones I've broken. And I was thinking about other people I know who've had injuries. God, I mean, especially these three particular people. In that's a lot of injuries.
You nearly
between
died in a head-on road crash, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a few years ago now. I was thinking about this. I think about Petey. He's broken lots of bones. Mm. And I feel some of them I feel like I will feel forever. And there's lots over the years I don't feel. Like broken shoulders, that's gone. Like separated shoulders, I do have to do physio on those things.
See that one had surgery. See that? That's grade four. That was fully detached. That I had surgery. They put a surgery leg. It was quite a new surgery. It was a lot quicker recovery when I was racing. It failed in about 4 weeks, and maybe or 8 weeks. I went back to see the surgeon. He said, no, it's absolutely fine. There's nothing wrong with that. And I was like, well, the bloody bone's sticking up. I went to see another surgeon a couple of years later, and he was like, no, it's failed completely. The surgery leg cheese grated its way through the bone it was attached to. He was like, I can reoperate, but it ain't going to improve anything. But as a result of that surgery failing, and then that's probably why my shoulder's so knackered that my elbows are knackered, because I ride a bit more like that rather than like that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Got that style going on. Style's got even worse. I'm like, riding horse. Yeah.
But I was thinking, because we were talking about it before the podcast, about Bernard Kerr, who's trying to race Supercross, which is a really difficult thing to do.
Is he finding out or what?
Yeah. Well, we'll soon see in a few months' time.
Yeah.
But, you know, back in my day, in the downhill pits, that was probably what was talked about the most, was the Supercross results from the weekend or the motocross. It felt like if anyone could have chosen what they actually did for a job, it wasn't racing mountain bikes, it would have been racing Supercross.
Oh, yeah.
And what about for you? Was there something
that
you...
Well, Bernie, he does remind me a bit of like kind of what I went through, is the fact that mountain biking's mint, but it does pay well, and then you're going to spend most of that money pursuing a failed motocross career, which is sort of, and taking all the knocks along the way. Do you know what I mean? Which then ultimately kind of ruined things with me and Giant back then, because I was never riding because I was like 8 months a year injured. How did you do that training? Nah, motocross bike. Yeah, it was all like that, yeah.
But the other side of the coin is, if he does pull it off and qualifies and even races the full Supercross series, that puts him into this sort of zone of athletes that really you don't see very often.
No.
Someone who can be a World Cup podium racer and race Supercross, that could be
insane.
A whole new athlete.
Has anyone ever done that before?
Palmer once. Palmer,
but he didn't race a series, did he?
No, I don't know if Bernard wants to race the series, does he? But no, I think he wants to do A1. I haven't won. Palmer qualified.
Yeah.
Yeah. The bike... Yeah. Afterwards, he put it against the wall and held it flat out in fifth gear for 15 minutes trying to blow it up. 125 yarm, it didn't blow up. Shredded all the wheel, tyre hanging off it. It was on the wall in his house.
No way.
Yeah, it was like built into the wall, like up.
Wow.
Yeah, it's funny.
Wow. And that's the sort of the athlete, the crossover, I think. Someone who's actually, he was snowboarding first, but there aren't many people now that actually say, right, I'm going to do this and sort of put it out into the public domain so people can choose to follow along or even judge them.
Well, yeah, it's a good, why not? I don't know. I feel like good luck to him. I hope he does it, but I'm not sure he will. Because he's yet to hit a set of AMA whoops in fourth gear, which is a fair undertaking, really. Like, I don't even know how you build up to that. I guess it takes years, and he ain't got years, but you know what I mean? He can jump. I think probably a supercross track will be a bit of an eye-opener. But you know, but like, there's whoops in that, and probably the turns is where he'd lose time, but the whoops, that's a very different proposition, I think. I've seen whoops on British motocross tracks, you know, and they're gnarly enough, and they're like molehills compared to the things he's going to have to hit. So.
Yeah,
fair play though.
Yeah, why not? Have a go, mint. You're only young once. Yeah. He's got, and he can get a bike out there. He's doing it. Yeah, good, good on him.
So you deal with lots of different athletes, even on the video series, which we will talk about in it afterwards. But like the as far as cross country and downhill, someone who really impresses me at the moment is Matthew Van Der Poel.
Oh, yeah.
What do you think about that guy just showing up and being as good as he is?
Unfortunately, I think we're not going to see much of him after next year. I think the Olympic year, yeah, he's pretty much, you know. But what he's done is incredible. Like, I think he's brought another crowd to the mountain bike party to watch. And he just spices things up, doesn't he? Like, he can go with Sherta, do you know what I mean? So you got, you know, this year we've had the world cyclocross champion up against the world mountain bike champion. And and actually, you know, Van Der Poel, when he's been there, has been arguably the stronger, really, on his days, you know what I mean?
It's been really interesting.
Yeah, especially with the short track and the points, because he's unbeatable in that, the points he gets in that. But he's a phenomenal athlete. I feel like we're very lucky to have him in mountain biking, even if he is going to go to the road after the Olympics next year, which is the rumour. But they also, and he said the road's boring and he loves the mountain bike. Yeah, well, I suppose it is. Just sit there for 8 hours, don't you, chat to your mates.
Yeah.
Is that how it is?
So it does seem like that. It does seem like that, doesn't it?
There's a bit of effort involved. But yeah,
at the end.
But you can see why they love mountain biking. I mean, it is more dynamic and more bike. You're riding a bike more, aren't you? Like,
oh, absolutely. So he's going to ride, is he going to ride mountain bikes at the Olympics or road at the Olympics?
That's what people are saying. Mountain bike's going to be his thing at the Olympics. Right. And after that, that's when he'll switch the road.
Yeah,
I'm not sure if that's absolutely confirmed. That's what.
No, I don't think it's absolutely confirmed. That's right. I mean, it's like, but that's what everyone's saying.
And what if he doesn't win the Olympics? Does it change then? Because Nino's going to be obviously wanting to win that as well. And the two of them up, it depends on the track, and it looks super technical.
It's wild.
I mean, it makes it really
like
exciting.
Good Olympic track.
Yeah, it makes it really exciting. You think last Olympics we had Sagan taking on Sherta, and that looked like it was a totally crazy option. But
to me,
but for a few punctures, but it could have worked.
Chris, do you think, how badly let down, right? I think we were by the last Olympic track. Where was it? In blooming...
It was not great.
Well, no, what annoyed me was, is that not the fact that it wasn't the best track. You've got to understand that, I guess. You know, it's fitting into the Olympic. But the fact that the track gave so many punches out.
Yeah.
Like, that's a race that comes around once every 4 years. Like, and the track in Japan looks full on, but let's hope it doesn't create punches. I mean, you know, all those little sharp rocks everywhere.
Yeah.
It took Sagan out. It was like the spectacle was ruined, and I was so gutted.
It took Sagan out twice.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Absalon
flattered, didn't he, as well?
My take on the Sagan thing was, that's a roadie showing up and trying to ride a mountain bike hard and puncture him. Because,
well, that's a good point. I hadn't seen it like that.
I mean, I could be completely wrong. No,
it is part of it, but it was the field, as I remember, it was decimated by flat tyres a bit. And I was like, I tuned in to watch a race that's only on every 4 years. Try and have a track with no flats. I don't know.
So you think Sagan
being weird?
I think he
is in ill experience as a mountain biker cost him. Yeah, that's a
very good point.
Good point.
And it's actually Nino. He didn't flat, did
exactly,
he?
Yeah, that's
a really valid point, that is, mate. I hadn't even thought of it like that. I was just pissed off because I wanted to see
it. Yeah, head to head.
Well, it's good, isn't it? When people come from other sports, it creates such a lot of interest for you.
Especially like Van Der Poel, where they are rising stars or already a star like Sagan, and they bring that attention that shows actually how cool what we're doing is.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like the sort of younger brother asking for validation, but it's pretty cool that someone will show up and do that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like Bernard's doing in the Supercross. It's like, it would be so good for him to go.
Yeah, but Van Der Poel's turned up in mountain bike races and is winning. I don't think we're going to see Bernie with a big AMA number one plate on the front of the...
You never know.
At the end of the summer, dude, the end of the winter, yeah.
You never know.
You know. No.
Well, we do. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, he won't win. He ain't going to win it. He ain't going to win the series. He survives first round, that'll be something. Yeah.
What about downhill? Another classic year. There's been injuries this year. The biggest one I'm thinking of... I've completely forgotten his name, Brooke McDonald. So out with a savage crash, and it's a shame not seeing everyone sort of see the season out, but it was another incredible year for downhill.
Yeah. One of the best. Every year I sit at the start of the year and I'm like, well, it was good last year. Surely this year ain't going to be as good. You know what I mean? And every year, really, it keeps getting better. I mean, that finals in Snowshoe was like literally coming down to Danny Art, the last man down to sort it, was mad, wasn't it?
I felt a bit sorry for Danny, actually, because it was such an incredible ride to win that race. But the main news wasn't that.
Yeah.
It was the French guys. But yeah, Omri Peiron and Loic Bruni, you've got to think they're the guys to beat now, rather than someone like Gwyn, who hasn't really showed much.
No, it'd be interesting to see with Aaron, won't it? Whether he can actually come back now. He's sort of had 2 years, more or less. Mm. Well, 2 years where we haven't seen him at his best because of injuries. I mean, he's missed big chunks of seasons. So, yeah, I wonder now. It's that, like you say, the momentum is very much for them two French, and it doesn't look like it's going anywhere. Bruni's incredible, isn't he? So he's like a doctor, he's like a professor. He's so exact. And then you've got Peiron, who's just a little bit
wild,
loose. And when he's on, in Leger, one of the greatest race runs you will ever see, dude. Like two-wheel drifting all the way down. How did he even get to the bottom of the hill?
I'm amazed when a rider, we've talked about this on the Dirt Show, too, Neil. It's like when one of these riders in downhill gets onto that vein of form, they're nearly unbeatable.
That's right.
I don't know if they ever even, whether they feel it at the time themselves or it's just us looking in on it, but you're almost... Like Peiron's
it's such a difficult thing to do.
Destined.
And Danny Hart has always warmed up two seasons and been better at the end. And then, like this one, he's won the last round of the year. And then it's like, oh no, it's off season. Mm. And it feels like it's so hard to then come back in absolutely at the top again. Yeah. You come in and get the top five. Well, I can't, obviously, but someone like Danny Hart can. But it looks like he finds it hard to come in and win.
It's that level. You always, I got on the lift with Danny at one of the last lifts up from Snowshoe after Quali or something. And he said he was just pissed off because he'd been close all year, but he just couldn't beat the French.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but you're not having a season. He was a bit down. I was like, you're having a mega season, man. Look what you've done. When you're on almost every podium, when he, but one, but Leger, where he just sort of had a bit of a meltdown because he was trying to beat him so hard, I think really is what happened. And then, and I said to him, dude, but that was you a couple of years ago, whenever it was, when he won three and then the world's in a row. I was like, that was you. And when you win, man, and you're on that plane and you're riding that way and you're that confident, you are literally unbeatable. And then he went and beat him that weekend.
Yeah, it's so amazing.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? They're in that, it's such a weird game, isn't it, downhill? Yeah. Like to be in the gate and to control your head and to ride at your best, to ride how you rode in practice in a race run. It's almost impossible. I found it so.
I find it amazing that you can watch nearly all of the qualifiers come down and they all look faster and faster and faster. And then those last two or three guys come down. They only go a little bit quicker on the timesheet, but visibly in every single part of the course, you're like, well, this is much quicker.
So I thought about this. Actually.
How is that? Yeah. That is so crazy.
You're on another level again.
Yeah.
I rode yesterday on my e-bike, actually. So I was bombing out laps on it, riding some downhill tracks, and I felt like I was getting good. Like the last hour, I was like, oh, I feel great.
Come back on the card?
No. But then I stopped and I was like, I'm gonna have a little breather. And you sit on your phone at the top of the hill. And then I dropped into another track that I felt like I'd ridden really good the last time, but I'd had 5 minute break and I was like, oh my God, I feel terrible. And it reminded me of the downhill racing days when you sat around for 3 hours, went to the top of the hill and then tried to do one perfect run after not riding for 3 hours. I was like, such a difficult skill.
Mate, I did a trial the other day and I'd had a mint three laps, it was a four-lap trial, and I needed fuel. And I looked in the queue for a section, I was like, I'm going to have to stop and get fuel. Yeah. I went to the van, I didn't speak to anyone, I filled up, had a drink to eat, a bite to eat, did I say a drink to eat?
A drink to eat.
Who knows?
You can do that.
I can do whatever I want. Yeah. Anyway, I refreshed.
Yeah.
And then, and got back into the trial at the last lap, and I knew it was because...
Just because you broke the rhythm.
What the hell? How is that? You know what I mean?
Get out of the
floor. I just felt knackered all of a sudden, like it done me.
I feel like that is the magic of downhill though. That's the half the appeal for me is just someone having one go at doing this thing. And if you mess it up, if you snap your chain out the gate, for most people, it's done.
Yeah.
And that's what's so good about it.
I think in the
that is what's so good about it. And so frustrating as a rider, but as a spectacle, it has to be one run forever.
It's straight in the women's downhill, don't get that vein of form it's not quite as obvious because there is like been a huge amount of dominance from Rachel over a much bigger period.
Yeah.
And I guess it's because there's not quite the depth of talent of her level. But this year it's been really different because obviously we had Tracy Hannah put that season together and then Worlds, I don't know. I mean, I just didn't think at the start of the year we'd ever have seen, was it Marine?
Miriam
come back and be world champion.
Mental,
at the end of
huh?
it. Yeah, you'd never have guessed it. But it's a really exciting season coming up for those
those, next year's going to be brilliant, isn't it?
Those girls, because it's yeah. It's
there's people struggling.
They're all going to be in
still. I think Rachel. That was quite a bad.
Do you think Rachel won't
over.
Be in?
I don't know. All right, who knows? But I know coming back from that is not an easy thing to do.
Big injury, man. The end of like she's had an amazing career.
Yeah.
Don't know if she'll come back.
Do you not think?
No, I don't know. No, I don't know. No, I don't know. I literally mean I don't know.
Yeah.
But it would be, yeah.
The thing is, if she
I'd
comes
love her
back,
to come back, but she's going to want to win. And she's just like, she's had so many injuries, man. How many times can you? That's bait. And she's, you know, no doubt is thinking about having kids and, you know, all that sort of stuff is,
yeah.
She's been at the top forever. I hope she comes back.
What's crazy is she comes back. She probably will win races.
I'm sure she
will win races. Yeah.
She won't come back and not win. No. You know, if she gets half through the season, she's nowhere near. That'll probably, I would imagine, she wouldn't be there. She's only there to win races if she's there.
Yeah, yeah. She's a race. She's an out and out racer. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. To be honest, I didn't think when she did it, I was like, right, that's Rach done. And then when I watched all her the way she reacted at Worlds from home on her Instagram. I was like, that's a woman who is missing mountain bike racing and she will be back. Like, it's a really, really hard decision, I suppose, really, isn't it?
But it's blooming difficult for all of us ridden in a sport to like see those last days of the riding and thinking I've got to stop and it's an hard thing.
You know, when
it's
you take another decision, big knot like that and you can't bloody, you're on crutches for how many months and it's like a 6 month, it's a massive recovery from that.
But yeah.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if, you know. But let's hope she comes back and we can relish seeing her up against Valley and Tani and Marine and Miriam, of course, you know, and then you've got Hoffman in there as well. And I mean, it's
when's
a lot
Valley
of them.
Hall going up?
Next year.
Is it?
Yeah, it's on.
It's right. Going to be amazing.
Yeah, next year's the year of all years, isn't it? It'd be nice if Rach was part
Very
of it, wouldn't
excited
it?
About that.
What about your mountain bike racing career? Did you find that hard? It felt like you went straight into what you're doing now. But did you find retiring?
Yeah, a little bit. Well, I should have retired about 8 years before I stopped. Because, you know what I mean? So, and I didn't like the mountain bike racing that much. And I really did when I started up until 96 was good. 97 was my best year. 98, I got a 3-year deal with Giant. So, I mean, that was a bad move on their part. So I didn't do anything for 2 years. And then in like 2001, I was like, oh, contract's up again. Better do something. And I got back to 11th overall that year, in the series, which was all right. But
great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was the ticking time bomb of me actually trying hard and not doing very well. I mean, once I won that World Cup and then the year after, I was sort of done with it, really. But the money kept me going. But I much would have rather been racing motorbikes, which I was doing, you know, myself all the time. But I don't know. It was a weird demise from the sport for me. And then all the TV went and then the trucks stopped coming and all that. And I just lost interest in it, really, at the end.
But you were.
As a racer. And the pressure done me. I didn't like it.
All right. But you weren't in the situation where you really wanted to do it and you were then, you couldn't find the money to do it. So was that difference the sort of way that you found something else to do? Because you're like, well, maybe I don't want to do this anymore anyway, so let's find something else to do. Because I know in my situation, I wanted to do it, but I couldn't. The money wasn't there anymore.
No, not really. I was happy enough to sign out. Yeah. No, I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't actually ever properly retire or anything. Because I'd still got money off Giant in 2000. I think it was like 2006. I was still getting paid. It was 2006. And then I went to Vigo to race. And I was on my hands and knees at the start puking.
I remember.
Yeah. Yes. And it was the only time I failed to qualify. And I took it as being on me, even though I literally was sick at the start. And then, but I didn't qualify. And then that was on me. And I was like, that's not good. You know what I mean? I'd like to be a bit better than that. Although, honestly, I'd been drinking heavily the night before. I drank half a bottle of cough medicine. I was hallucinating. I had this tick. No, I want not because of, no, I had a tickly cough, right? And you know when you got a tickly cough?
Yeah.
I kept taking a bit more and a bit more. Anyway, I remember I was in this restaurant and I was looking at this aquarium and all the fish started to do strange things. And then I looked at the bottle and I drank 3/4 of a bottle of cough medicine. So yeah, and then I started drinking and then I was violently ill the next day. I even had my hair cut that night. I went from long hair to skinhead. I just did mad shit.
But yeah, you didn't get locked up like one other famous British downhill.
No! I'm old flower pots, mate. They come back to buy, didn't they, Petey Dog? And Bertie was completely innocent in that. And that's the sad about that. They both ended up in a cell together.
Is that right?
And Lee, you know, poor soul. On it, innocent man he is. Hoofed in there because of Petey's wrong. Anyway, he shouldn't talk about it, really, because, you know, they can't go into Spain.
It was on the newspapers because Petey won the race and it was from hero to zero on the newspaper.
Oh, it's good. Wow. Have you just said hero to zero about Steve Pete? That's got us off. That's terrible. God, it was a long time ago.
It was. More, 2005, 6, was it?
Something like that. Yeah. But anyway, so...
You downhillers, man. I
forgot the point of my thing was... That year, I was also doing X Fighters. Red Bull asked me to do X Fighters because I'd done a bit of. They'd interviewed me somewhere and was like, "Oh, he's quite good." And then the next thing I was doing X Fighters. So that was it. I was just World Cup off. I didn't go to another one and just concentrated on. Well, I just had a good time doing X Fighters, which I didn't ever think would lead anywhere at that time. But I loved it because it was motorbikes. Like I was just going and watching the best world's best freestyle motocross races. Amazing. Incredible, yeah.
And was it a difficult job to commentate and host all that stuff?
Well, I was a co-host. So Ed Lee was the anchor. And obviously I learned an amazing amount off Ed about how to do it because he's a genius at live hosting. Like, he really is. You know what I mean? So for here, I was like his apprentice in some ways, and I've learned most of what I know off him. I've learned a lot more in recent years, but, you know, because I've done it on my own for so long now in the World Cup. But yeah, that was the foundation of it. And I only met Raymond Delew, who owned Freecaster, at an X Fighters. And he thought I was this big-time TV host because I was with all the Red Bull lot. And he was like, "Can you commentate on some mountain biking?" And I was like, "Well, I've never done it before." But long story short, a year later, he found out that I'd race mountain bikes. He thought I was a TV host, not a mountain biker. And that's how I got into Freecaster. And that's why I drank so much because I was so nervous. Like, I had about 4 pints before we even started the first one in Maribor. And then, it kind of...
And that's something people wouldn't necessarily know when they see you commentating, is that you do take it very seriously. You really...
I even did. Then I researched. Yeah, then really I just had to have a lot of booze in me to deliver anything. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess the booze is less now, but you take it...
None now. None. Yeah, no, I don't drink
it
now, no.
Take it really serious and you get nervous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what's weird now? I don't get nervous for the TV job anymore. Mm. I get nervous for the big races, and quite often I feel like I'm not as good at a big race. So Val de Soleil will get me because I know it's like, I love it. And I know that whoever wins is doing everything and taking massive risks. So you're aware of that. And I want the commentary to fit it. And it's like, so you build it up and build it up. Yeah, I sweated so much in Val de Soleil 2 years ago or something. Or when was Worlds there? I can't remember. But I got freaked out because it's the same job I do every week. But I was thinking about the race and I sweated the shirt. I had to go buy me a plain black t-shirt. it was weird.
Crazy.
Yeah, just get excited for the big one still. Like, it's a bit like racing. Yeah, it's great.
And that energy comes across, you know, that's what's amazing about it is you'll infuse everyone and it builds. And I guess it's not easy to build that energy over, how long are you on air for, an hour and a half or
well,
something?
With the women's as well, probably near 3.5 hours. Yeah.
So you've got to pace it. There's no point, you know what I mean?
You've got to pace. I don't know how we do half the time, but you've really got to, it's a tricky one because you know that the weather might, sometimes you know that there might be 30 riders to go, but the weather or the track or something, and you'd be like, oh, he had a bad qualifier, and you know that can be the winning run. So you've got to think about that might be the winning run. So then sometimes you've got to go a little bit large. Well, if you think it's a winning run, I'm going to naturally go large.
Do you ever watch the races back to see how you did on it?
All of them. Yeah. Quite often watch them back that evening, mate.
Right.
Sometimes I'll go back and watch them straight away. Yeah, and then I'll go out or something. Not so much on the double headers, but on a single header, you know, when it's just a standalone. But once I get to the doubles and then it's 1 week to the next, not so much. But yeah, I always watch the races back as preparation for the next one.
There's a lot of work that goes into those productions, a lot of people. If you go to a World Cup, you see their truck and
it's mental.
And you're obviously doing stuff before the live racing as well, so there must be a lot of preparation for that, right?
Oh, it's masses of preparation. Yeah, masses of preparation. I mean, yeah, like you say, easy. Normally you probably spend a day at home watching a couple of replays and updating notes and what have you, and you've got to keep your eye on all the websites. But then when we get there, I get there, say, on a Wednesday, and then it'll be writing the scripts. There's 4 sort of pre-show scripts to write. So I come off a rundown, which is like the VTs, and you write the bits in between as the presenter. And then we build on it from there. And then you bring the co-host in and start working out what you're going to ask them. And yeah, you just build a pre-show. But we have to do four of them. So that's the challenge, really.
It's pretty amazing, I think. It's sort of even the industry that we all work in, that you've got a bunch of, like yourself, if you're an ex-racer, but making these like TV-level programs, if not better than TV, because, you know, this sort of thing, mountain biking has never been on TV as good as it is on the internet. It's pretty crazy that you can get a group of people to produce this that really don't, a lot of people don't have a background in what they're doing, but are making this thing that everyone does enjoy watching.
Yeah, no, it's mad, isn't it? Yeah, it's, yeah. It's we not... had, you know, we're lucky. We have, honestly, like, it's a really solid team of really, really good people. That's sort of, and that ain't me being cheesy or kissing ass. That's the truth, man. It's like, everyone who works on that production, you know, there's nowhere to hide, though. Everyone's pinned. It's like, you know, it's great. Live, when you do live telly, you realise, sporting events, I suppose, especially. I've never done anything else. But yeah, but that's part of it. But it is graft. But I love it. I love it, mate. Sometimes I like the fact that I've commentated all day, been up at 9 a.m, done 2 pre-shows, commentated 4 hours. I go back to the room and I might be getting ready for cross country. Then at 8 o'clock, they'll be like, right, we've got to have a script meeting because things have changed. But yeah, I don't know. It's just part of it. It's exciting. You just got to keep moving and it's, you know, it keeps you on your toes. Yeah.
Do you think there's some parallels to the world of being an athlete? I think, back in the day as an athlete, from my perspective, there was a lot of partying as well, was a big part of downhill. Is that doesn't seem like it's quite there with the races anymore.
No.
But do you feel like you're carrying that on with your career, or is it all...
No. Oh, mate. No, the partying had to stop. Like, massive. Yeah, no, I'll have a couple of beers in the evenings, but you won't find me drunk, really, at a World Cup until the last one. I can't. You can't do it. Like,
you can't show up hungover to do a TV
no
live.
To be from working from like 9-10 in the morning, and also when you're commentating on that, there ain't nowhere to hide in that commentary. If I'm tired and hungover, you're gonna know it, man. I don't know. I've never done, since I've worked for Red Bull, one with any alcohol in me. Maybe very early on. In fact, I know I did, because they searched the booth and found a few beers. But no, I wouldn't. I don't dream of it, man. I feel like I'm privileged to get to talk about the world's best, man. Like, what a thing to sit and watch and have. And it's me that gets to sort of relay some info about it to the crowd. So you've got to treat those with absolute respect, no matter what the discipline or what the sport. They're the world's best, and that's that. And that's you've got to do it properly. That's that.
Do you ever think about the numbers, like the numbers of people that are watching all around the world?
No, never.
It's quite big.
Yeah, that's right. No, I never do, really. No, no. I like commentary. Really, I love the commentary. Because you get in there and it's like me and Claudio or me and Bart. Screen, headphones, everything I need is there. Everything.
Who's your favourite? Bart or Claudio?
That's a hard one. Bloody hell. Oh, my God. I don't know. I mean...
Don't answer that.
Okay.
Don't answer.
I really like Bart, actually. I think he's such a... You know, the insights, obviously, he's been there and done it. And
he lives it.
He's great at...
He lives mountain biking. Yeah. That's the thing. He's like... There ain't no need to give him a shake-up to go and find something out. You know, he knows absolutely everything. Yeah, he's incredible. And he's like he's a genius. Like, yeah, he's brilliant. He's fun as well, mate.
And obviously, he's riding experience.
First ever Olympic champ, you know, but he's still out there now doing about 800 mile a week. Yeah, into a headwind in Holland, in the driving rain. You know what I mean? He loves it, mate. Yeah.
Right. Let's talk wild rides. Tell us about your new series.
Yeah,
this epic.
It's pretty good. Have you seen it? What do you reckon of it?
I've actually not seen. I feel terrible, Rob. I've seen the trailer.
Trailer was
good. But I haven't actually had time to sit down and watch
series, it. Series is going down really well.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've heard very good things.
Yeah.
So tell us all about it.
It was 4-month trip in Wanit. I got back to the UK 2 days before Maribor, so I had a couple of nights and I went straight to the first World Cup. And I went all over the world. But basically, it was literally the storyline is you're going to go here. You're going to try and find the best trail. You're going to go and ride it, and you're going to meet a load of weird people on the way. Well, yeah.
Pretty much what you know. I think so.
That's sort of how it seemed, yeah. And we did do a lot of weird, weird stuff.
So who's we? Who's it?
I did the first two, Ecuador and Colombia, with Finn Isles.
Yeah.
Then I went to Nepal with Ollie Wilkins. Then I went to New Zealand, Kenya, and Lesotho with Matt Jones.
Wow.
That what?
The crowd.
Oh, he had a big one in the middle of nowhere, didn't he? Yeah, massive.
That
one,
must
yeah.
be dodgy, like, obviously, middle of nowhere. Getting yourself yeah. in those situations.
Like, you know, they're all better riders than me by a long way. And it was, and I was there for the, I knew I had to make it through 4 months, man. It was like, I mean, they even called it Rob's Wild Rides or something. I was like, I can't be getting hurt. So that was a bit, towards the end, I started to ride a bit better as well, just because I've been riding a lot more. But it was definitely in the back of my mind, not so much because of where we were. It was more like, I don't want to not yeah. finish this series, man. It's like, yeah. I need to do it. So that was probably harder than people thought to balance that, really. I don't know. You just, that's the trails are blind. So the film crew would ride down them and they'd be like, we're always up against the clock. And they'd be like, right, go! Like, you know, in the later shows, I started to have a bit of a wander down and a look. But I had a few near misses, just basically, yeah, I had a really big near miss in Ecuador. Now, did I? Yeah. Bloke told me to pedal and pull up. And I just sat there. And it was actually afterwards, I was going down with altitude sickness. And I could see this little jump. And I was like, and I just rolled up to it. Me, it was like an 8 foot gap with about 10 foot deep, like a big water thing with concrete edges.
Oh,
yeah. And I don't know. I don't know. I managed to pull over it, but if I'd been a foot shorter, I'd have been in real, yeah, oh. That would have been it. Yeah,
out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, bottom of a half up a volcano. Well, bottom of a volcano, that was. Yeah,
oh my god,
you got to go to amazing places. I watched the first one, the Kenya one with Matt Jones and then Lesotho.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing you get to go to these places. Whose idea is it to go to those? Is someone saying to you, Rob, I've got this great idea. Why don't you go here?
Initially that was, and then we did give some feedback on places we'd like to go.
New Zealand.
Huh?
New Zealand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I go to New Zealand, mate. Yeah. Yeah, takes to New Zealand. I'd never been to New Zealand before. Yeah. That was probably the hardest one to make, actually, because of the lack of culture shock. You know what I mean? Like, when you go to Africa and someone, or if you go to Ecuador and someone's eating a gerbil, I mean, that would blow your mind. Or
yeah, right.
Like the tribe we saw in Kenya, mate, was first up. They sacrificed the goat, which is in the show, but they didn't. Yeah, well, and actually, of course, it's a difficult thing. What they needed water.
Yeah.
What?
Well, no.
Well, you know.
That wasn't why I was laughing. Yeah, I'm not, I just think it's funny. Not yeah. that they killed the goat, but...
Laughing at animals being killed.
Oh, man.
That's took the... well, took,
no. Carry on.
Anyway, so they needed, like, for water, whatever, but, you know, as soon as they cut his throat, old mate was there, like the main artery was... I've never seen like it, mate. He was like...
Oh, what, drinking it?
Yeah, drinking the blood down, mate. Yeah. And then they caught the rest of the blood in a pot. And while it was congealing, is it? You know, when it starts, yeah. They like, and mate, he was shaking it, and it was all like, there's like a big scab in it. And he like was offering it, man, this congealed blood. It was so bad.
And what did they do with it?
Oh, drank it, ate every bit of the goat, made something out of its skin.
Well, and they did all that because you turned up.
No, they didn't. Do you know what?
I wasn't like a sacrifice because Rob had turned up.
No.
Oh.
No, it was a sacrifice because it hadn't rained for 4 years.
And that was going to help hell. How was...
Well, this is what they believe. So this is what they've always done, I think. You know what I mean? They had two virgins down there. Like, they yeah. No, they did to watch this sacrifice. It was like a religious thing.
What, you and Matt?
Yes, the dog! No, he's... Hey, watch out. You can cut yourself on him.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing. But, yeah, he did. Yeah, then we went back to their house, their mud hut, and matey, well, no, but matey in there, right? Have you ever been in a proper African mud hut?
Oh, yeah, no.
Well, I hadn't either. But, like, honestly, in this one we went in, like, they're so hard. There was probably about 18 people lived in it or something. Matey proudly announced, he was 60, this fella. He looked about 40, and he had... 14 wives and I think it was 47 children. He said he wanted to make it 60 children. He, nice round number. Yeah, like, you know, and they all lived, a lot of them lived, well, they sort of lived in this mud hut, and it was like the fact that you just sort of sleep on the floor anywhere again, you know, there's not really any beds, and they have a fire in them, which was the most shocking thing to me because it's bloody hot in Africa.
Yeah.
But the fire isn't for heat, it's purely for light. Because you can't see in it otherwise. So yeah, you know what I mean. So, and there ain't no chimney or anything. It's just that they're hard. It's such a harsh environment. But they're all happy, really. It seems like they have, you know, enjoy their life, which is. But
what
yeah.
a thing to experience. It must
oh
be
mate,
amazing.
around the village we were in, it was like they just got all these thorn bushes and like it's like tumbleweed, but really gnarly, spiky stuff. mate, I goes, why do you have the boundary to stop all the goats getting out? And that, he was like, no, elephants will crush us in the night. You know, like they just bowl through. Yeah, like that. Yeah, it was mad.
It's pretty crazy. It's as much about the situation that is about riding bikes, which I really like. It's cool to see stuff like that. That
it's an adventure show, really. That's right. It's not about, I don't think the show's about, it's not just about riding bikes.
Did you show up at any of those places and anyone know who you were?
Not certainly none of the locals, no. There was a few spots here and there, but none of the locals knew me, no. No, no.
And New Zealand was harder because you didn't really have that kind of...
Yeah, not that's probably not the shock, the culture shock, really, which is kind of what, for me, a show like that thrives on. It energises me to find all these new things and that. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
So what goes on here? Crankworks? Oh, right.
Well, yeah. Bit. I mean, we went out in the wilderness and we did really go into the wilderness in the second half of that, though. We got like Ellie after Ellie into this further and further. Yeah, we had Ellie's shooting Ellie's and all the bikes and all the kit hanging underneath it in like a pendulum. We're following this river up. And every time you'd go around a corner, you'd feel the old weight sway out of all the bike. The old heli would just go, and you could feel it getting pulled down. Yeah, it was gnarly, mate. Yeah, they're gnarly. I think I did like 9 or 10, 11 helicopter trips in that. Yeah. And I don't like them.
I was going to say, are you comfortable with that?
But the best one was we're on Mount Kenya, 5,000 metres or something. The helicopters only could just about drop us off. Like, only one of the helicopters, one had to stay low. It wasn't equipped to fly that high on that thin air. Pretty, you know, I felt like. We are in Africa, but apparently Prince, anyway, the pilot was a right laugh. And one of them, the older one, I went down with, and we got down halfway, and he was like, right, we've got to get out of it. This cloud was coming up. And I was like, what? He was like, yeah, get the bikes and we've got to go. And you could see this cloud. We'd be stuck there all bloody night. So we threw the bikes in the back seat of it, and me and Matt jumped in with this old boy. He takes off. It was so high altitude, he could only fly flat. So we're flying down this valley right above people's heads, walkers that was there, literally right, picking up speed before he could go out. He hands Matt his iPod, this beat up old iPod. He's like, he's flying with an iPod. He goes, I can't. And he was like, I can't get it to work. Can you find get AC/DC on or something? Yeah. And then he goes, Prince Harry flew this one last week. And I was like, what? He goes, yeah, Prince Harry was down here. And he reckoned Prince Harry, they fly him about.
Yeah.
So that made me feel a bit safe. And then we started giving it a bit of like Apocalypse Now with this fucking rock and AC/DC player and all that. And I goes to him, mate, no chance you can drop us at the hotel, is there? Like sort of taking the piss. And he goes, ha! This is Africa, friend. We can do what the f*** we like. Yeah, he just banged her over. And he literally dropped me out. Well, me and Matt, 10 feet from the front of the hotel. It was hilarious, mate.
No air traffic control.
Just bowled out. Went straight to the bar and had a gin and tonic. Yeah, it was great. Yeah, God.
Yeah,
it was brilliant, mate. Yeah,
Well, you've talked me into it. I'm definitely going to catch the series.
Series is
sure.
Good. Yeah, it's good. It is good. It is a good series.
And where is it? Where can we see it?
Red Bull TV.
Yeah.
Yeah, redbull.com, YouTube channel as well. But yeah, Red Bull TV. Yeah, go check it out.
Rob Warner Wild Ride.
It was fun. And it was wild.
Are you planning more of these? Like another? I know you've done meets before. That's another
meets
series.
Is coming up again now. I'm just about to start shooting those again. Yeah.
Pre-season stuff, or is it to be go out during the season, I suppose?
It'll come out next season, I'd imagine. But we're starting, we're doing, we're in it now. I think we're going to be doing before Christmas, Tom Page's.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Which, you know, the FMX do, hopefully. Yeah. And Shauna Coxey, the climber.
Oh, yeah.
So that would be, yeah. So... And that's what I love about my job as well. Like, I don't know anything about climbing. I've started looking at it a bit now. But when you actually watch people like just climbing, it's just insane what they do. So that's something else. I love sport, I do. Any sport. I could watch World Cup cricket. As long as it's like of a good level, I seem to be really into it. Yeah. You're seeing the very best do what they do, and you can't really match that, can you?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Great. A great opportunity for anyone, but for someone who loves sport like you do.
Yeah.
Dream come true.
Yeah, it's pretty good, mate. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Right. So what should we do? Should we wrap it there?
Yeah, I reckon. Good chat.
Right. Rob, thanks, lads.
Thanks very much.
Any of it usable?
A lot of beeps going on. Usable,
I didn't swear much today.
No.
I think I only swore three times.
We'll get the editor. Do a
I love
it. Yeah, count. Yeah.
Did I swear more than three or four times?
I think it was three.
Three, wasn't it? Three, yeah. That ain't bad. You did say do what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. You're very interesting, actually. I found myself just...
That's because I talk so much.
Yeah, good at it.
Well, I don't know about good at it. It's like I can't stop.
Right, next week on the podcast, we have got...
I don't know yet.
Hans Ray.
That would be good.
We can never get him. That's why we've got you here.
Don't tell me. Prince Andrew. Well,
have you watched that?
Little.
Oh, my God.
Leave it.
But probably not.
Let's wrap up this podcast before we talk about Prince Andrew.
Wrapped.
Whoa. Cheers. Is that it? Do you even say goodbye?
I don't know. I don't
say goodbye together now.
Bye.
I'm not sure how we wrap up podcasts.